Good afternoon. Happy Sabbath, everyone. I appreciated that last hymn. Not many wise men now recall, and then we have Exhibit A, right? So we know right off the bat. Appreciated that. Appreciated all the Dons we had up here today as well. So that was also welcomed. Also, we have a big week at our house this week. We have not only Luke going back to IU, but our daughter now leaving this Thursday. Many of you have come in every Sabbath, and is this your last week? Gleefully, and we're over here going, don't rush the process. So I would like to ask if you would put up some prayers for my wife, Donna, especially. Mostly because now it's just her and me, right? So she's left with me at the house there, so she'll need a few prayers. But it'll be an interesting time, interesting adjustment. Many of you have walked this path before. They don't tell you about this in the books, right, when you have them when they're young. And sections in the back, don't worry about all this talk. But they don't tell you about that in the little handout they give you. But, yes, it's an interesting time, so we will have an interesting week ahead of us as well. Well, it's interesting how the sermonette and the sermon tie in. Mr. Rothenbacher made reference to St. Peter at the Pearly Gates, and I have a joke along those lines as well. So if I could indulge and stretch our theology just for a moment, I'd like to mention this one to you. There was a taxi driver and a priest who died and went to heaven, met by St. Peter at the Pearly Gates. And he said, come with me. And they hopped into a little limo. They took a ride, went through a couple neighborhoods, and they came to this huge mansion, just a monstrous place. And St. Peter motioned for the taxi cab driver. He said, here's your place. And he hopped out and went his way, and he went down the road, turned a couple side streets. They came to this little shanty that had a little bunk bed in it, sort of run down, and he told the priest, well, here's your place. So when the priest got out, he stopped and he said, wait, Peter, I don't understand. I've served you my whole life. I've visited the sick. I've given sermons. Why am I living here? And he lives in the big house. And he says, well, when you were giving sermons, people were falling asleep. When he was driving taxis, people were praying. So it gave me a fresh perspective on the benefits maybe sometimes of a different role. So hopefully you'll stay awake for most of it anyways. But that was I always want to keep that in mind. Well, it was about 35 years to the day. I was back in a room I didn't think I would ever go back into. I stood in the room and it was empty that afternoon. And it looked smaller than I remembered it. It was certainly quiet. No one was in the room. I was there by myself, and as I stood there, a torrent of feelings and emotions swept over me. Emotions that I thought were buried deep, but I was surprised how quickly they came forward. And I remembered people. I remembered faces. And I started asking myself, as it was just me standing there, asking again, why did it have to happen that way? Why did it have to be that way? What was the reason? What was the meaning? Why was it so? And I was interrupted out of my thoughts as a lady came down the stairs, and she handed me a small marble box. Smaller than I thought, but heavier than I imagined as well. And it was an interesting day, almost some symmetry to that day in some ways, because I was at a funeral home. And the lady had brought down the remains of my father. And we had a delayed memorial service that day for my father. And that was the remains, and we were going to go to the cemetery. And we got to the cemetery. It was myself, my mother, and my son. And as we came to the gravesite, I was reminded, as I looked at the gravestone, and I saw the date, 1961 to 1983, 22 years. And those thoughts came back to me. Why? Why did it work that way, God? Why? What was the meaning? And I have tried to rationalize so many different ways over the years. Maybe it was to make me different, God. And I will say it has. It has changed my life. But I said, God, it couldn't have been worth that. Not her life. Couldn't have been done differently. And I sat there holding the remains of my father on my lap. 1920 to 2017, 97 years of life. But I thought about the heartache, the misery, the difficulties, the pain, the last couple of years especially that were difficult. Why, God? Why did it have to be that way? Why was it that way? And I thought, so many feelings as kids growing up, my sister, my dad, myself, and those thoughts flooded over me. It was a magical day in some ways to be with my mom and my son. It was a beautiful day to finally lay my dad to rest. But again, to see and walk through the graves. I do often, it's an interesting place when you're at a cemetery. I find it to be quite a peaceful place in many ways. But I always find myself doing math on the numbers as you look at the different dates with that small dash in between. And I saw one that caught my eye. They were two large, I forget the name, the ones that are above ground, the large ones. And one had a date, I did the math, and it was 17. And there was something written, to be with his brother. And I said, oh no, how could that be? And I looked right next at another large one, 21 years old. And you walk and you see these things, and you struggle at times, and you wonder, why does it have to be that way? Why is life the way it is? And it's interesting, today I want to hopefully go over some basic truths that maybe we take for granted, that maybe sometimes we have to be reminded of. As we go through life with the difficulties, only because I have the microphone today, that I can speak of a couple of things that have affected me deeply. I know so many of you here have been impacted with almost unimaginable events in your life. But I thought about that, and I thought recently, too, I learned of a situation of a person who had lost a young child and was now an atheist. Because where was God in the picture? That can't be a God. If there's a God, why would he allow this to happen? And I think it's a good basic question for us to talk about and think about, especially with our young people today, is that thought of where is God in life? It's all around us. And as I thought, and I sat there that afternoon at the cemetery, I was reminded of something that's written in Ecclesiastes, the third chapter. Turn with me, if you will. It's a section of Scripture we know well. We know quite well. It was actually set to music. It became a very, very popular song, these eight verses in Ecclesiastes. And as I sat there asking those questions and thinking again, and trying to make sense of the two situations in my life, I remembered something that's written in Ecclesiastes, the third chapter. Just for a bonus point, I know someone in the back will probably know this, but you know the group that made this song, Turn, 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 from the 60s. You probably know, right? The Birds. And it's a very pretty and a meaningful song, but this is what these eight verses are talking about. And I remember in verse 2 it says, there is a time to be born and a time to die. It's life. Right? It is life. These are the things, if you read through these eight verses, there's an offset, opposites, if you will, of different scenarios in life. A time to plant, a time to pluck what is planted. Time to kill, a time to heal, a time to break down, a time to build up, time to weep, and a time to laugh, a time to mourn and dance and cast away stones and gather stones, time to embrace and refrain from embracing, to gain and to lose. The second part has special meaning in our household, a time to keep, that's my wife, and a time to throw away, that's me. So on certain days, we have interesting times, especially where's the mail? Well, that was a time to throw away, right? But you read through, and my purpose this afternoon is not to, because you can read commentaries, and it's very interesting on some of the meanings behind some of these sayings. Some are self-explanatory. Some have a little more of a deeper meaning. But as you read through this, it seems like it's the fate of man. These things happen. But when you read Ecclesiastes 1 and 2, we know this book very well, and most commentaries or commentators would say Solomon is the author of this book. When you read it still, it feels like Solomon looks at all this and he says, you do all these things, you live your life, you work hard, and then you feel like this stuff is out of your control, and then you die. And what does he say in verse 9? What does he say in chapter 3 and verse 9? What profit has the worker from that in which he labors? You do all these things, you try to do it, and then life just sort of takes over, doesn't it? Life just sort of happens. These things happen. You find yourself mourning. You find yourself at a time of loss. You find yourself, what does it all mean? So I think it's a very, very interesting question, especially as I thought about my personal situation. I thought about that person who had walked away because God had left him when his young child had died. People who walk away for any number of reasons because God is nowhere to be found. So this afternoon I want to spend some time just on one verse in the third chapter. One verse that brings out two things, and I think life is very interesting. It always depends on your frame of reference. What is your reference point? What is your lens? How do you look at life? And I think, again, it's a basic truth, but one I hope that sometimes I think we all might need reminders of, as I did that afternoon as I sat there pondering again some of the things that happened to us in life. And it's good to remember. It's good to recall some of the things. Because if you look at these seasons in life, if you're like any of us who are human, I'd rather be at it where it says it's a time to laugh. Right? And it's a time to dance. I look at the different seasons. I said it's a big week coming up for us at our house. When I look at our situation and our children, I said, I wish we had more time. I would keep this season running a little longer if I could. Right? I'm sure you have things in your mind when you say, I would humanly, selfishly want certain things to go on longer. Right? There are times, there are seasons in our lives. There are also seasons and times when I'd say, I'd want the key to make that go away, to have that off my back. When there is a time of war and all the things that might mean to us on a global and then an individual basis. When you said it, there's been too much war, there's been too much unrest, there's been too much, I want that to go away. And these are the seasons we look at. And so I can understand on one hand when a person says, I don't see God, I walk away, I don't believe in God anymore. When you look at life in all its reality, in all its difficulties, in all the things that a person can step back from and say, it's pretty unfair. It's pretty unfair. So I lay out a really cold reality, and I think Solomon was sort of at that point when you read, and I'm sure many of you have read through, you read those Ecclesiastes, it's a mixture, and I really enjoy his perspective, and we'll get to a really good perspective before it's over on this. But it's a natural perspective, because here was a man that was able to dabble with all the money he had, with all the wisdom he was given, experiment and try to find something that avoided one of these seasons of pain. That avoided the hardship of life. And he came and he said, I look around at my situation, I look around at everyone, and you can't. It's all meaningless. It's all vanity. I can't get it from the things I'm trying to produce physically. I can't bring that feeling that I want. I can't create that season of time that is good without end. I don't see it here. What does it profit me? All the things I'm trying to do, it's all meaningless. Meaningless. Right? That's an easy spot for people to get to. Until we read verse 11. This is what I want to focus on this afternoon. I want to raise two points out of verse 11. Notice what he says. He says, He, God, has made everything beautiful in its time. Also, he has put eternity in their hearts, except that no one can find out the work that God does from beginning to end. He says, so I want to focus on that first part of verse 11. He has made everything beautiful in its time. That word beautiful, you can take it to mean beautiful because that's what it means, but it also means appropriate or fitting. Everything that happens that we read about, in those first eight verses, God is involved with. God has done it at the appropriate and the proper time. We're going to raise the bar today. I talked to someone before services, and I said, recently it seems like the topic of faith is hitting me square in the eyes. that when you think about it, you have to pull back to a really high spot in these scenarios of life that we talk about and say, God has done this at an appropriate and fitting time, and it is beautiful. And it's hard when you're in one of these spots in the first 8 verses that are causing you grief and anguish to see it that way. But it says in verse 1 of chapter 3, in everything there is a season, a time for every purpose under heaven. Those words again, season, if you look it up, is a fixed, finite portion of time. What do we know about God? God has certainly appointed times and seasons. You go back to Genesis 1:1. What did God do? In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth at a certain time. What did He do? He separated the day from night. Would it be very odd now if it was night at this time? We'd say, wow, this doesn't seem right. I must be in Alaska or somewhere else. It wouldn't be right, but God has put certain things in place. How about the seasons around us, right? What's your favorite season? Now we're in summer. Right, we look at the weekly cycle God has put in place. We look at the holy day season. We just talked about that in the sermonette. God has a cycle, a rhythm, seasons and times. God has set certain things in motion. Right? God is controlling so many things that we don't even understand. You don't have to turn there, but in Daniel, when the king Nebuchadnezzar wanted his dream interpreted and he called on Daniel, and Daniel prayed to God, you can jot it down. But in Daniel 2, in verse 21, he said, God, you are the one who determines times and seasons. You remove kings and you set up kings. God created the earth at a very, very specific time. God is calling people what? According to His timetable. We heard about the first resurrection, the second resurrection. Right now we're starting to put on a wholly, hopefully, different perspective in one sense. When we look at life and events and situations, we realize there's God who makes everything beautiful. God has appointed things in their set time. How often we hear about, how often have we asked the question over the years, when will Christ return? Right? How often have we thought about that? At the time the Father has set. Jesus said, I can't even tell you that. Only the Father knows. So God is one who sets up times. He sets up seasons. I think it was interesting too when you can read back in John, the 7th chapter, and it was time to go to the feast. And they said his brothers wanted Jesus to go to the feast with him. You might recall that. And Jesus says, my hour has not yet come. It is not yet my time. It's not my time. And he talked about that in terms of that. So we start looking now, and Solomon has switched gears. And I think it's interesting because Solomon was the author. And we know this was probably written at a later time. Some of the Psalms are written that way. I'm sure, as with life for any of us, your perspective begins to grow. You probably looked at some of those difficulties, some of those seasons that are set up, realizing you're vanishing away. It might seem futile until we realize that God has a set time, has a set season, a set purpose. And when He does things, it's appropriate and it's right. That's a big mental hurdle, a big mental leap to make when you're in the middle of something that seems out of time, out of season, incomplete, random, difficult. Difficult. But that's what is being asked. When it says here a time to be born and a time to die. We could read verses where God says He knows our days. Right? Sometimes we can forget that. Sometimes it's easy for us. We can question His love, question His presence. It's interesting. As I mentioned, my sister died 35 years ago, and it has certainly, we heard about the born horse grandchild, and I think about a hole in the heart, right? A physical hole in the heart. I know for myself personally, there is an emotional hole that sits there, right, to this day. But over the years, I've never really have addressed that with my mother. We've known, obviously you know, and we talk about it. Remember, this is the day Denise died. Over the years, we've had. So a couple of years ago, I asked her, I said, Mom, how have you dealt with that? How have you made it through? Because I know my hole, and you're her mother. How did you get through that? Thought it was an interesting perspective. My mom said, you know, I've always viewed it as she was a flower in God's garden. And he decided to come down and pick that flower. And I said, Mom, that's a really neat perspective. I wouldn't have thought of it that way. I would have thought it wasn't the time to pick that flower. But she saw it that way because when you understand God has a time, God has a season, and it's not our season, that gives us peace, contentment, and understanding. And I think about these eight verses as well, right? Sometimes that's what the beautiful thing about why we come here every Sabbath as well, because someone might be in the house of mourning. Someone's in the spot where they're dancing, right? Someone is tearing down, someone is planting. That's, I like the expression I've heard people say, you know what, that's just where I am right now, right? That's just where you are right now, and God knows that. This all denotes time. There's times and seasons. It doesn't one day, it's maybe one, maybe certain things are a short season. Some things are a longer season. Right? It's just where I am right now. And we all go through that. We can all be there for one another as we go through these seasons, these times, because we know that God sees it all. God understands. God is in control. Much different than randomness of life. And I thought about a verse we read very often, but it hit me in a different way to tie in when you think about the seasons, where you are, what you are going through, what God knows about it, and what it's intended to do. I read this verse a little differently. Turn back to James, if you would, for a moment with me. James 1. James 1 and verse 2, my brethren, we've heard sermonettes on this very topic over the years. My brethren, count it all joy when you fall into various trials, knowing the testing of your faith, that season you're in, produces patience. But let patience have its perfect work. That's where you are. Let that season run its course. Why? That you may be perfect and complete, lacking nothing. Nothing. That's why these seasons are there. God puts us into that. I thought about this a little differently because we say before, count it all joy. That's what you're supposed to do. But it's a season that God knows about. He's in control. And He's forming and shaping us so that time can have its perfect work. But it only happens when we realize that God is in control. That God has made it so. Go back to Ecclesiastes, the third chapter, the second part of that verse, and what Solomon talks about. Ecclesiastes 3. Ecclesiastes 3 and verse 11, he says, you know, God has made everything beautiful, appropriate, fitting in its time. And He has also put eternity in their hearts. I think that was an expression I hadn't really thought about in its fullness before, that God has put in man, because again, these are some basic concepts that we rehearse. Sometimes we talk at home about that, but it's basic truth sometimes when you're talking to someone who's coming not from that reference point and understanding what it's about. God has put a certain longing, a certain spirit in man that is eternal. That is something that looks and wants more. Here we are caught up in this physical life with all these seasons that come at us. That's difficult to keep our head above water, but God has at that put a longing, put something that's eternal, put something that connects us back to Him, which is beautiful. And we hear it sometimes, don't we? When we hear a song, or we read something from God's Word, or where we have great joy, or when we come in contact, as I did recently, with death and a reminder of that. There's an eternal longing. We had an experience I think it was the week before last, we just went up again to the Indiana Dunes. We had never been there before in all these years, but we spent some time there. It was very enjoyable. And we sat there one evening, and you realize why they're called the Great Lakes. And you sit there, and we sat there, and we had by the beach and look out, and you just see the endless water. Every time I'm in that spot, what does it make? It's just you realize your insignificance. You realize there's something greater beyond what we know. He has put eternity into our hearts. And while we wrestle with the things that weigh us down, God has done that. He has made that connection back to Him. And often in life, it's easy at different times that we can subdue that peace, right? In the world especially, or we can have that as well. When we ignore, we suppress that. We're busy with work. We're busy with our ambitions, the cares of this world. It's suppressed. But every now and again, I would venture to say almost to a person alive today, some type of aching, longing comes out when we realize there's got to be more than what's in front of us. You read it in the news. You see it all the time. That's how God designed us, that there is a connection back to Him. Back to Him. You know, and we are told, so we have this physical thing that we see erosion, we see decay, we see difficulty, we see periods of joy. And we have this longing, this eternal longing. And we say, how do we manage? How do we manage this? Well, look at 1 John, the second chapter. Because we're told how to manage this paradox in one sense, if you will. This peace of knowing something is there, that God is involved, but we feel very much subject to some of the physical things that we are subjected to. I had a conversation about that. Again, it's funny how much things hit you right before even services, talking about, you know, how people in the Bible could have acted a certain way or done certain things. And I think because we're human, because we're physical, and we have that yearning, but sometimes don't we get caught up in this world and we hang on to certain things, and we come here to services and say, we need to disengage from the world. We need to look to God. Right? We remind ourselves of that continually because we're human, we're physical, and we can suppress that eternal side, that peace that is so magnificent. And what's written about here in John, in 1 John 2, in verse 15, again, some basic truths, but truths that are important as we think of this topic. Do not love the world or the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not him. For all that's in the world, the lust of the eye, the lust of the flesh, the pride of life is not of the Father, but of the world. The world is passing away. It's very hard for us to see that or understand that sometimes because we're so consumed by the things of the world and living in the world, and we can suppress what's really coming. Forget that eternal urging that is inside of us. It says the world is passing away in the lust of it, but he who does the will of God abides forever. If we start to make that transition away from the world and everything we see and thinking we are consumed by a life, not fully understanding that life, not remembering that God's in charge, that our attachment has to be to God and to doing His will. Solomon mentions on this point of eternity, he puts into his heart. One last thing I want to just cover this afternoon, which I think is interesting as well. Go back to Ecclesiastes, if you will. And I mention this because I don't think I'm alone in this situation. Sometimes you get to a spot and you are hit by life, some of the things that you really want to control. Isn't that at the core of everything we almost were discussing? We want God. This is, don't you understand, this is not the right time. This is not what is needed. This is not where I need to be. This is not, this is not, this is not. And that's what hits us all the time. It's about letting go and saying, God, You have it. I trust You. You know my days. You know what's good. You know what's going to be appropriate and fitting. And I'm going to hold on to that. Even though physically I see something very different, even though inside me I feel something very different, you continue to walk forward in faith, waiting. Waiting. I didn't think it would be 35 years or more before I would wait to find out. Right? But we wait. You wait. We wait. And we trust. And we move forward. Solomon says that God has put eternity into our hearts. He's put this connection back to Him. But it says, even with that connection, we don't fully see or understand the works of God from the beginning to the end. You know what? I take immense comfort in that. Immense comfort, because that makes God all the bigger now. That concept of eternity and not knowing the full breadth of the picture. We've got this little, it's like my wife laughs at me sometimes. I have the smallest phone known to man. Sometimes I'll try to watch a movie on it. She said, what are you doing watching my phone? I'm watching my movie, right? That's what it feels like instead of being with a huge screen, right? What God is doing is magnificent. And I will fall under that title all the time, saying, I don't know, but I know it's going to be great. I know God has it. I don't have to worry about this person. God's got that. Right? Even though He's given us that, we don't see everything clearly. I always like to use the example, and I don't think I've used it here maybe once. The artist Bob Ross. Anyone remember him? The hair and everything is great, right? But Sunday mornings, you start watching him paint, and it is just beyond words. He takes these different colors. He's painting trees. He's got sun. He's doing all this great stuff. And all of a sudden, he goes in, four shades of strokes of black on the left side. He just ruined the picture. What is he doing? Stop the frame, right? That's what we do sometimes with God. We stop the frame, and we say, God, you just ruined it. This is not right. This is not good. We don't have the perspective. We can't see His work from beginning to end. The greatness. We want to always create an awe in our children and ourselves that God is doing something well beyond whatever I can imagine, that I want to put my hope, my faith, my trust in that process. Looking in that direction. You know, we see so many examples. You know, even here, look what Solomon says just a couple chapters later. Because here's Solomon, and I give him and applaud him greatly. He said, I'm going to set about gaining all the wisdom I can so I can understand God. I can understand everything. I'm going to apply my life, my resources to doing that. Right? Probably in a much more arduent way than I have when I look at what he wrote. But what did he say in chapter 8 and verse 16? He says, when I applied my heart to know wisdom, to see the business that is done on earth, to understand it, what's it all about? Even though one sees no sleep day or night, then I saw all the work of God, that a man cannot find out the work that is done under the sun. For though a man labors to discover it, yet he will not find it. Moreover, though a wise man attempts to know it, he will not be able to find it. Won't be able to understand fully what God is doing. Paul says that in 1 Corinthians. Right? We see through a glass dimly or darkly. Now I know in part, he says. This is Paul. Right? How many years have we been, we heard today, we had the math on how many classes and our PhD that we have. But I would dare say, we still see dimly. We still don't see the full picture of the grandeur of what God has done. We see some. We have a connection. We have a longing. That's what we want. We want that plug-in that goes back to God. But to understand His greatness, to understand His glory, not me. But what a spot to be, because you can throw a lot under that umbrella. I can say, I know God is good, and He's got it. Because we don't get it all right now. Go to Acts, the first chapter. I think this is a very interesting one as well. When you think about just before Jesus was going to ascend back to heaven. That situation, can you imagine? I always like thinking of scenarios. What a period of time in those days. Jesus is crucified, He's resurrected, He spends time, and now He's ready to ascend. What a period of unbelievable things those closest to Him were able to witness. In Acts 1 and verse 6, the disciples, they were gathered around. In verse 3, they were seen by him for 40 days, right? Speaking of the kingdom. And then in verse 6, therefore, when they came together, they asked him, saying, Lord, will you at this time restore the kingdom? Is it going to happen now? Is this when it's going to, right? What's the time? When is it going to happen? Is it now? What did he tell them? It is not for you to know the times or the seasons which God has put in his authority. It's not for you to know at this time. We don't know the fullness. But he says, you will receive power. When the Holy Spirit has come, you'll be witnesses. You will have enough. You will have enough. Stay close to me. Stay tuned. You will find out more. Let's just stay while we're in the New Testament. Go to Romans 11. I want to go to just a couple verses on this, because if you come away with nothing else, I hope that the grandeur of God has opened up a little more how we view God. Not having to worry even in God's business sometimes. I find that's an easy thing to do, to take some control back for God. Or from God. God, how about this? What about this situation? God, he's got it. We have our role. God's got the rest of it here. Romans 11, verse 33. Oh, the depths of the riches, both of the wisdom and knowledge of God. How unsearchable are his judgments and his ways past finding out. We can't find out everything about God. And then one last verse on this, but I thought was interesting. Job 26. Job 26. Again, he's talking about all the wonderful things God has done. He stirs up the sea in verse 12. With his power, he breaks up the storm. By his spirit, he has adorned the heavens. His hand pierced the fleeing serpent. But verse 14 of chapter 26 in Job. Indeed, these are the mere edges of his ways. We're just touching the edge, the periphery of the things I can describe to you now. That's probably just a starting point. It's hardly anything. And how a small whisper we hear of him. Right? Don't limit God. We don't want to limit God. Solomon said that we can't understand the beginning and end of his ways. Now, I say that in some ways I'm probably preaching to the choir. But remember I said God has put eternity in all mankind. Right? We've had philosophers over the years. We've had scientists. We've had people. This is where it gets very interesting. We heard about university today and school and education in the world, right? Because there is that longing in man to understand something more. What is the meaning of life? What is life about? What is it? And unless you have God smack in the middle of it, you will take a path that goes without God. Look at Romans 1. I want to make a point of this, especially to our young people, but especially to all of us, because it is the lie that is out there that Satan would love to have us swallow. And even though that link to eternity is there for all of us, for some it takes a different outcome or path. Verse 18 of Romans 1. For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who suppress the truth in unrighteousness, who have actively said, I'm not seeing God or looking for God in this equation, because what may be known of God is manifest in them. God has put it in them. He has put eternity in them as well, so they could see God, for God has shown it to them. For since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, so they were without excuse, because although they knew God, he put eternity in their souls, they did not glorify him as God, nor were thankful, but became futile in their thoughts, and their foolish hearts were darkened. That's the story of the world today. Very important on our starting point and where we think about that eternity and who owns that. That God is the one whose beginning and end of what the work he does, we can't fully understand. So where do we go from here? I told you a few things from Solomon and what he wrote about God and where he is, and hopefully I'm preaching to the choir, but again, I think some of those basic truths are good when someone comes and says, where is God when my child dies? Why do I believe in God? How do you answer that? Where is the answer in that question? That's a very real and difficult question. Right? And I say basic truths in one sense, but those are difficult, and we need to be able to articulate that, to understand that God has set timing for everyone, as difficult as it is. And once certain choices were made back in the Garden of Eden, certain things started to happen to mankind. But God's timing is still there. God's love is still there. It's a difficult one to tell someone who doesn't have that background. But that is the reality of a basic truth that hopefully we understand and we take our hope and put our hope in and our trust. So where do we go from here? Again, two very basic points. That day by day, as the events of our life unfold, that we are putting more faith in God. That God is becoming a bigger being in our world. That we understand that God is in control. God is in control. This should bolster our faith. This should give us joy. This should give us a certain level of contentment, even in those deep seasons and times of our life when it's difficult because we are human. I will not deny that for any of us because we are difficult, but we know God has it. God sees it. God understands, and He has designed times and seasons for His glory. For His glory. Right? And His good. That lesson, if we worked it out ourselves, where would the glory go? We talked about that before with Gideon. Why did God take Gideon down to almost no men at all? Because He says, if you take all your men and you go in, you will capture all the glory along with the victory. Wouldn't it be wonderful one day when that full 3D painting is in front of us, we understand God now. Now I see. Now I understand. Because I do believe in this lifetime, some answers won't be fully apparent to us. We won't see the full beauty of what God has created. I know in our situation I've described to you, I've seen collateral damage. I've seen difficulties come out of that. But I know the painting's not done yet. Right? But we have to walk, we have to trust, we have to go in faith, knowing there's a great God who I can't understand His beginning or His end. And we put our faith more completely. And when we talk about faith, we always go to one example. Let's go to the example of Abraham quickly. Hebrews 11. Think of Abraham when you think about your life. Seasons, times, when things come into our life, sometimes we don't always control them. What does it say about Abraham in the faith chapter? Abraham, Hebrews 11, verse 8, it says this about Abraham. By faith, naturally, Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to the place where he would receive an inheritance. He went out not knowing where he was going. Right, when we talk about control, remember the story of Abraham at his world? Abraham, go. Isn't that the story of saying, God, well, no, it's not, I got this going on, this, you don't understand, can we talk? He went by faith. When Jesus called the disciples, what do? They immediately dropped their nets. Sometimes it's easy to want to get into a negotiation with God, to wrestle back some of that control. But it says here, he went not knowing where he was going because why? He had to have a deep belief and trust in who God was. By faith, he dwelt in the land of promise, in a foreign country. Somewhere that would have been a difficult move. It'd be hard to move from here to Terre Haute, let alone a foreign country, right? Dwelling where? In big mansions and things? No, in tents. Where's God? Where's the timing? When's it going to happen, right? Where's that promise? With Isaac and Jacob, the heirs with him of the same promise. How was he able to do this? Because he waited. Remember we talked about that. He waited for the city which has foundations. Who's behind that city? Whose builder and maker is God? The last thing I would mention from this is that we know God. We know who He is. We know what He's done for us. We know He's in control. It's up to us to live a life worthy of that calling. Live a life that is worthy. As I went to the cemetery, I'm always struck. My mind just races to do quick math, and I see numbers that are just sad because of lives that are cut short, situations that are difficult. And we have time now to walk worthy, to walk in a way that would be pleasing to our Father, because we see those seasons of time. There is a time to be born and a time to die. But there's time to do things in between. And that's a message for another sermon, but certainly let's go back on this point and see what I'm talking about in terms of what should we be doing. What is a life worthy? You know, Solomon, in all the things he wrote, which I enjoy reading through in Ecclesiastes and different of the Proverbs and things, he comes, as we well know, to the end of Ecclesiastes. Ecclesiastes 12 and verse 13. And I like these kind of things because I'm sort of a bottom line kind of person too. It says, let us hear, what's the conclusion of the whole matter? All the things we've been talking about today, what is the conclusion? Because if it's just this life and it's just random and there is no God, right, then we're probably on a whole different discussion point. If that's all it is, if it's just man toiling, the labor of man, it doesn't mean anything, things happen, time and chance, then we probably live a certain way. But Solomon came to the conclusion where he says, we should fear God and keep His commandments. It's a pretty good mandate for living worthy of what God wants us to do, for this is man's all. Because God will bring every work into judgment, including every secret thing, whether good or evil. God is in charge. God is in control. We can take great comfort in that. Even at times that are difficult, at a time that I just described to you, and I know after talking with many of you, you also have difficult times, difficult walks that we walk forward with. And it's just good to be reminded that God is who He is. God is in control. And that hopefully more and more we walk and we live in a way that has more of that eternity in our hearts, fully leading us, driving us, and moving us forward every day of our lives.